Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside. Episode 7, Uneasy Rests the Crown.
Hello and welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Ruth.
And I'm Gary. We'd absolutely love to hear from you, so let's get those all-important contact details dealt with straight away. You can email us by sending an email to Gary or Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com, or you can record some voice feedback for us by using the Evoca recorder on our website. You can also talk to us in our forums or on Twitter. All of these details are on the Contact Us page on our website, which you can find at CelticMythPodShow.com. But first, some news and views.
As a part of our quest to bring you news about Celtic mythology from the distant past right up to how it affects people today, we went along to a Druid Open ritual at the Long Man of Wilmington, deep in the heart of Sussex in the UK. It was organised by the Andarida Gorseth.
It's an excellent time as well. At the base of the Long Man, there's kind of like a little hill, which is really strange because the Long Man itself is on a big hill. And everyone gathered on this little hill in dribs and drabs, didn't they?
It was almost like a plateau, wasn't it? It was a circular plateau below the Long Man. It was almost at his feet.
I think what I really liked about it was the fact it was very informal. People just turned up. There wasn't anyone telling them where to go or ticket sellers or anything like that.
And everybody was very, very friendly.
There were some lovely people there.
Dave and Kerry do an excellent job. They were absolutely wonderful and led the ritual from the start. And we were also very, very lucky to be able to see the Mythago Morris dancers dancing as well.
Good.
They were super, weren't
they? They were really good. I'd like to see if we can find out more about them. It was nice to hear not just the gods talked about, the gods of Celtic mythology, but the Fae. Because the Long Man himself is on one of the hollow hills, the supposed homes of the Fae. So that was interesting to see. So all in all, we had a good time and would recommend it to anyone who fancied going along and seeing a little bit about what modern-day Druidry is all about.
The other thing to mention is it's family-friendly. There were
That's true.
And families of all ages, people of all ages and persuasions. It's a very warm, friendly atmosphere. And, you know, all you've got to do is if you want to know what's going on or...
In fact, we took some kids along with us and they loved the time.
Yes, they did. Loved it. They did, and these are fashion-conscious teenage girls, and they absolutely had a field day. They really, really loved it. They're still talking about it now, aren't they?
It's true.
And I just wanted to say thank you so much to Dave and Kerry. They were the ones who started these open rituals, and they are absolutely super. They've done an amazing job.
Personally, I don't know how Dave manages to find the time to do his music, the rituals, his druidry and everything else that
he
does.
And the spring camps and everything else they
do. It's astounding, isn't it?
It's amazing, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it really is. So as time goes by, we hope to be able to bring you more special episodes with information about the druids or current archaeological explorations and other modern survivals of the stories of the Celts. These episodes will probably be irregular, but we will bring them to you in addition to our regular episodes and not instead of our ongoing commitment to you to bring you the Celtic myths.
Yeah, so listen out for those special episodes. We're quite looking forward to putting them together.
We are.
Oh, and another quick notice. We got it wrong in the last episode when we said that this episode would conclude the saga of the Sons of Tuiran. Their story has turned out to be much longer than we expected. So this is part 2 of 3. And to remind us of what happened in the last episode, Gary?
Lew of the Long Hand discovers that his father has been murdered and returns in sadness to Tavir. He asks the assembled nobles what they would do if their fathers had been killed and decides to demand a blood fine from the Sons of Tuiran for his father's murder. They agree that his request is not too excessive. And then Lew reveals just how hard it will be for the brothers to pay the fine. they set off with heavy hearts for the magical boat of Manannan. The river Boyne sparkled with a thousand crystalline stars in the midday sunlight, as the sons of Tuiran and their sister Enya trudged over the gentle hills towards the swift flowing water. There, tied to thick wooden posts, the ocean sweeper, the Squabdwina, rocked gently on the swell. It was a small, unremarkable curragh, and would have passed unnoticed except for the mark of Manannan at the prow. So Breon got into it, and he said,
"There's a place but for one of her person along with me here. This curragh is far too narrow."
"You ought not to be faulting the curragh. The ocean sweeper has many shapes as the cloak of Manannan has colours. Step into the boat." "My dear brother, it is a bad thing you did to kill the father of Lu of the Long Hand, and whatever harm may come to you from it, it is but just."
"Do not say that, Enya. We are good in heart, and we will do brave deeds. We will sooner be killed 100 times over than to meet with the death of cowards."
"There is nothing more sorrowful than this. See you driven out of your own country."
When Breon had taken his place in the boat, there was plenty of room, and when all three were seated, the boat began to shine like a white crystal, and the waves made a song of greeting as they lapped about the prow. So the three pushed the curragh out, away from the beautiful, clear-bayed shore of Erin.
"What course shall we take first?"
"We will go look for the apples, as they were the first thing we will be bring. So we ask of you, curragh of Manannan that is under us, to sell to the garden in the east of the world."
The ocean sweeper did not neglect that order, but sprang from the shore like a seabird, and sailed forward over the green-sided waves and deep places till it came to its harbour in the east of the world.
"What way have you a mind to get into the garden? For I think the king's champions and the fighting men in the country are always guarding it, and the king himself is chief over them."
"What should we do is to make straight at them and attack them, and bring away the apples or fall ourselves, since we cannot escape from these dangers that are before us without meeting our death in some place."
"It would be better if the story of our bravery and our craftiness to be told and to live after us, than folly and cowardice to be told of us. And what is best for us to do now is to go into the shape of swift hawks into the garden, watch us happen their light spears to throw at us, and let you take good care to keep out of their reach. And after they have thrown them all, make a quick flight to the apples, and let each of you bring away an apple in your claws, and I will bring away the third."
They said that was a good advice, and Breon cast the spell from his druid staff upon himself and the others, and changed them into beautiful golden hawks. They flew towards the garden, and the watchers took notice of them and shouted on every side of them, and they threw showers of spears and darts. But the hawks kept out of their reach as Breon had bade them, till all the spears were spent. Then they swept down bravely on the apples and brought them away with them, without so much as a wound. But the news went through the city and the whole district, and the king had 3 wise, crafty daughters, and they put themselves into the shape of 3 ospreys, and they followed the hawks to the sea, and they sent flashes of lightning before them and after them, and scorched them greatly.
"It is a pity we're in this form now. We will be burned through and through by this lightning if we do not get some relief."
"I can give you relief. I will do it."
With that he used the druid staff again, and they were turned into 3 swans, and they flew quickly down into the sea. The ospreys went away from them then, and the sons of Tuiran returned to their boat. After that they consulted together, and they agreed to go to Greece and to bring away the skin of the pig, with or without leave. So they went forward till they came near the court of the king of Greece.
"What appearance should we put on us going in here?"
"What appearance should we go in but with our own?"
"That is not what I think best. Let us go in with the appearance of poets from Erin. That way, the high people of Greece will hold us in respect and in honour.
It would be hard for us to do that, and we without a poem, and it is little we know how to make one.
However, they put the poet's tie on their hair and they knocked at the door of the court, and the doorkeeper asked who was in it. Brion told him that they were poets of Erin, and were come with a poem for the king. The doorkeeper went in and told the king that there were poets from Erin at the door.
Let them in, for it is in the search of a good man they came so far from their own country.
And the king gave orders that everything should be well set out in the court. That way the children of Danu would say they had seen no place so grand in all their travels. The sons of Tuiran were led in then, having the appearance of poets, and they fell to drinking and pleasure without delay. And they thought that they had never seen, and there was not in the world a court so good as that, or so large a household, or a place where they had met with better treatment. And later the king's poets got up to give out their poems and songs. And Brion, son of Tuiran, bade his brothers to say a poem for the king.
We have no poem, and do not ask any poem of us. The only poem we know is the song of taking what we want by the strength of our hand if we are the strongest, or to fall by those that are against us if they are the strongest.
That is not a good way to make a poem. Hear me, King Twiss. Hear the poem of Erin. O Twiss, we do not hide your fame. We praise you as the oak among kings, the skin of a pig, bounty without hardness. This is the reward I ask for it. The war of a neighbour against an ear. The fair ear of his neighbour will be against him, he who gives us what he owns. His cart will not be the scarcer for it. A raging army and a sudden seer are danger to whoever goes against them. The skin of a pig, bounty without hardness. This is the reward I ask, O Twiss.
It is a good poem. I do not know a word of its meaning.
I will tell you its meaning. O Twiss, we do not hide your fame. We praise you as the oak above the kings. That is, as the oak is beyond the kingly trees of the wood, so are you beyond the kings of the world for open-handedness and for grandeur. Skin of a pig, bounty without hardness. That is, the skin of a pig you own is what I wish to get from you as a reward for my poem. The war of a neighbour against an ear. The fair ear of his neighbour will be against him. That is, you and I will be by the ears about the skin, unless I get it with your consent. And that is the meaning of the poem.
I would praise your poem, there was not so much about my pigskin in it. You have no good sense, man of poetry, to be asking that thing of me. And I would not give it to all the poets and the learned men and the great men of the world, since they could not take it away without my consent. But I'll give you 3 times the full of skin of gold as the price of your poem.
May good be with you, King. And I know well it was no easy thing I was asking, but I knew I would get a good ransom for it. I am so greedy that I will not be satisfied without seeing the gold measured into the skin myself. But mind, measure out the full of it to my brothers first, and then give good measure to myself, since it was I made the poem.
But when the skin was brought out, Brion made a quick sudden snatch at it with his left hand, and drew his sword and made a stroke at the man nearest him, and made 2 halves of him. And then he kept a hold of the skin and put it about himself, and the 3 of them rushed out of the court, cutting down every armed man before them, so that not one escaped death or wounding. And then Brion went to where the king himself was, and the king made no delay in attacking him. They made a hard fight of it, and at the end the king of Greece fell by the hand of Brion, son of Tuiran. The 3 brothers needed to rest for a while after that, and then they said they would go and look for some other part of the fine. They decided to go to Pishar, king of Persia, and ask him for the spear. So they went into their boat, and they left the blue streams of the coast of Greece, and they did not stop until they came to the borders of Persia.
Let us go to the court with the appearance of poets, the same as we went to the king of Greece.
We are content to do that, as all turned out so well the last time we took to poetry. Not that it is easy for us to take to a calling that does not belong to us.
Again they put the poet's tie on their hair, and they were as well treated as they were at the other court. And when the time came for poems, Brion rose up, and this is what he said.
It is little any spear looks to Pishar. The battle of enemies are broken. It is not too much for Pishar to wound every one of them. But you, the most beautiful of the wood, it is called the king. It is not bulky. May the spear drive on the whole crowd to their wounds of death.
That is a good poem, but I do not understand why my own spear is brought into it, a man of poetry, Merin.
It is because it is the spear of your own I would wish to get as the reward of my poem.
It is little sense you have to be asking that of me, and the people in my court never showed greater respect for poetry than now, when they did not put you to death on the spot. And when Brian heard that talk from the king, he thought of the apple that was in his hand, and he made a straight cast and hit him in the forehead, so that his brains were put out at the back of his head. And he bared the sword and made an attack on the people about him, and the other two did not fail to do the same, and they gave him their help bravely till they had made an end of all they met of the people of the court. And then they found the spear, and its head in a cauldron of water, the way it would not set fire to the place. And after a while they said it was time for them to go and look for the rest of the great find that was on them. And they asked one another what way they should go. They decided to go to the king of the island of Shoger, for he had the two horses and the chariot that Lu Sambuldornach had asked for. They went forward then and brought the spear with them. Oh, and it was proud of the three champions were after all they had done. They went on till they were come to the court of the king of Shoger, and there was a great fair going on in the fields before the king's palace.
This is what we will do this time. We will go in with the appearance of paid soldiers from Erin, and we will make friends with the king. That way we will get to know in what place the horses and the chariot are kept.
Then, brothers, let us make ourselves known to the king.
Who are you, sir?
We are trained fighting men from Erin, and we are earning wages from the kings of the world.
Is it your wish to stop with me for a while?
That is what we are wanting.
So then they made an agreement and took service with him. They stopped in the court a fortnight and a month, and they never saw the horses through that time. And then Brion said,
"This is a bad way we are in. Have no more news of the horses now than the first day when we came to this place.
What is best for us to do now?
Let us do this. Let us take our arms and gather our things together, and go to find the king, and tell him we will leave the country and this part of the world, unless he will show us those horses."
So they went to the king that very day, and he asked them, what did they mean by getting themselves ready for a journey?
"You must realize, hey king, it's because trained fighting men from Erin, like ourselves, have always trust put in them by the kings they guard, and we are used to be told the secrets and the whispers of any person we are with, and that is not the way you have treated us since we came to you. For you have two horses and a chariot that are the best in the world, as we have been told, and we have not been given a sight of them yet."
"It would be a pity you to go on that account, when I would have showed them to you the first day, if I had known you had wished to see them. If you have a mind to see them now, you may see them, for I think there never came soldiers from Erin to this place that were fought more by my people than yourselves."
He sent for the horses then, and they were yoked to the chariot. And their going was as fast as the cold spring wind, and the sea was the same as land to them. And Brion was watching the horses closely, and on a sudden he took hold of the chariot and took the chariot driver out and dashed him against the nearest rock, and made a leap into his place himself. He made a cast with the Persian spear at the king that went right through his heart, and then he and his brothers scattered the people before them and brought away the chariot. Next, they chose to travel to Esal, the king of the Golden Pillars, to look for the seven pigs. They sailed on without delay or drawback to that high country. And this is the way the people of that country were, watching their harbours for fear of the sons of Tuiran, for the story of them had now been told in all parts, of how they'd been sent out of Erin by force, and how they were bringing away with them all the gifted treasures of the whole world. Esau came to the edge of the harbour to meet them.
"Is it true that the sons of Tuiran are come for all the gifted treasures of the world, and that all the kings you have visited have fallen before you?"
"It is true, noble king, whatever you might wish to do to us for it."
"What was it made you do that?"
"Not with the oppression and the hard sentence of another, We have had to put down all that offered to stand against us until this time.
What did you come to this country now for?
For the pigs belonging to yourself. For to bring them away of us is a part of the fine.
What way do you think to get them?
If we get them a good will, we are ready to take them thankfully. And if we do not, we are ready to do battle with yourself and your people on the heads of them, that you may fall by us, and we may bring away the pigs in spite of you.
If that is to be the end of it, it would be a pity to bring my people into a battle.
It would be a pity indeed.
Then the king whispered and took advice with his people about the matter. And it is what they agreed. To give up the pigs of their own free will to the sons of Tuiran, since they could not see that anyone had been able to stand up against them before that time. Then the sons of Tuiran gave their thanks to Isal, and there was wonder on them to have got the pigs like that, when they had to fight for every other part of the fine. And more than that, they'd left a share of their blood in every other place till then. Isal brought them to his own house that night, and they were served with food and drink and good beds, all they could wish for. And they rose up on the morrow, and they came into the king's presence, and the pigs were given to them.
It is well you have done by us, giving us these pigs, for he did not get any share of the fine without fighting but these alone.
And he made a poem for the king then, praising him, putting a great name on him for all he had done.
What journey are you going to make now, sons of Tuiran?
We are going to the country of Yurway, on account of a whelp that is there.
Give me one request, and that is to bring me with you to the king of Yurway. For a daughter of mine is his wife, and I would wish to persuade him to give you the whelp without a battle.
That will please us well.
So the king's ship was made ready, and they sailed north to colder climes until the frozen shores of Yurway came into sight. In the next episode, the revenge of Lu is finally revealed. And now for some listener feedback.
Listener Paul has raised an interesting question. For him, he finds the use of accents within the shows to be a distraction. We've got a thread in the forums about this, and it's really important to us to know what you think about this issue. Do you find it distracting? Would you prefer us to present our stories without accents? We want to give you the best we can. So if there's something that's really not working for you, please, please let us know, as Paul has done.
Yeah, we always appreciate it.
Then we can ask the rest of our listeners, and if a lot of listeners feel the same way, then we'll change what we do. If we can improve our show for you in any way, we will.
Yeah.
So please pop along to the forum and add your voice, or drop us an email and let us know what you think. We really do listen to you and try to get it right for you.
On the subject of improving the show quality, one of our listeners, Liam, is a sound engineer par excellence and came along to our studio and configured our equipment for optimum sound quality. We are constantly trying to bring you a much more enjoyable experience. It's worth mentioning that if you're in the south of England and in need of an expert sound engineer for mixing, production and other audio tasks, Liam has a wide range of experience in managing bands and solo artists. He's both a perfectionist and a really nice guy. You can find his contact details in the show notes. He taught me a lot. I'd like to say thank you, Liam. You're a lifesaver.
Yes, thank you, Liam. It was really nice to spend the evening with you and watch your skills at work.
What do you mean spend the evening with us? You took the opportunity to have a bath.
Well, I did see some of it.
That about wraps it up for this episode. So look forward to seeing you next time.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
From Celtic Myth Pod Show to
Infected.
This is Podcast Junkie, and I listen to it all. I share the best stuff on my iPod and ask you the question, what are you listening to? Right now, I'm giving away one signed copy of
Infected.
Now, I know you all have your very own copy of Infected, but does it have the signature of our future Dark Overlord, Scott Sigler? I also know that you have taken a picture of yourself with your copy of Infected and posted it somewhere on the web, because that's what our future Dark Overlord has requested of us. So for a chance to win a signed copy of Infected, send that photo of yourself with your copy of Infected to podcastjunkiecontest@gmail.com by May 28th, along with your name and mailing address. You must have an address in the continental United States or be willing to help a girl out with the shipping costs. On May 29th, 2008, I will draw a name from a hat and someone will be able to replace their copy with a shiny new signed copy of
Infected.
All I ask is that the winner passes their current copy to a library or friend who might enjoy this fine book. If you missed that address, just go to podcastjunkie.com for full rules and email address. That's podcastjunkie with a Y.com. That's it for me. Bye now.
Well, that wraps up this episode, and until next time, Slán go bhfuil. You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us a quick email or voice feedback by emailing either Gary, that's G-A-R-Y, or Ruth, R-U-T-H, at CelticMythPodShow.com. You can chat to us in the forums on our website. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. We heard Hag Hole at the beginning and are listening to The Skylark now. You can find out more about this foot-stomping band at www.sfhounds.com. And thanks again to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used for some of the incidental music in this podcast. You'll find links to their websites in our show notes.